Good morning. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is Eric Clay, and this is Made of Clay Mondays and the Made of Clay Report. And this morning, our guest is Sonia Hicks. Sonia, welcome.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here, We're going to start the interview in just a minute. We usually start with a little piece of music, so I'm going to cut to Marvin Gaye. Do you want to say something about this piece and why you selected it?
I remember it from when I was young, and I just remember when I was younger, and I just remember the words to it.
Right.
You know, they just have meaning even now, and this has got to be 30 years old or more.
Oh yeah, I mean this is about 40 years old.
Okay.
This recording, and yes, and the other thing is that this is the most frequently picked favorite song. Of the 7-8 months that I've done this show, this is the song people have picked consistently the most.
Is that right?
I think you're the 5th or 6th person, and that's not a lot of times, but that's still a lot of times.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, so here we go, Marvin Gaye, and What's Going On.
There's too many of you crying, brother, brother, brother. There's far too many of you die. You know we've got the family to bring some loving here today. Father, Father, we don't need to escalate. Me with brutality, get down. Talk to me, sister. So you can see, sister. What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
What's going on?
Oh, what's going on? Let me hear you sing it, baby.
And that was Marvin Gaye and What's Going On. And you're listening to the Made of Clay Report. And our guest this morning is Sonia Hicks. Sonia, the purpose of this show is to help us in this region to get to know each other a little bit better and to provide a venue to share our stories and what matters. And it happens like a conversation. And so tell me a bit about yourself. You know, where are you from and what do you do? And
well, I'm from, I was born in Chicago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I am actually from Buffalo, New York.
Uh-huh.
And I was there most of my youth. Mm-hmm. We moved there when I was around 10.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed there till I moved here. And I've been in Ithaca. Next year will be 25 years.
Okay.
Quarter century.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Time for a change.
Okay. And what? So what brought you to Ithaca?
I came to Ithaca because a friend of mine was a pastor here.
Mm-hmm.
And in Buffalo, I had started going backwards in my Christian walk,
mm-hmm.
best way to say it.
Right, right.
And I did not want to go back to what I had left. And so I said, well, Lord, I need to leave here. I need to move to something else. And it was either go back to where I was born in Chicago, which I had
mm-hmm.
at that age acquired some friends.
Right. And how old were you at that time when you were getting ready to think about leaving Buffalo?
I'm 27, I guess.
Yeah. So you were out on your own for a while.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I said there, or Ithaca, and I had been here with pastors, and we had come to support Reverend Lloyd, who used to live here, and she passed
mm-hmm.
in the last 4 or 5 years. But that really was the reason I knew about Ithaca, and I really liked the town.
What about the town drew you here?
It was country. It was so country. It was unbelievably country.
So unpack that a bit. What is country?
Not a lot of traffic, not a lot of people running around, just kind of laid back, relaxed.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, I just really like that. The atmosphere, the fresh air, mm-hmm. lots of trees, any direction you go in, it was a natural park or you know, something like that. And I really liked the gorges. And
mm-hmm.
I said, wow, this place is nice.
Right, right, right. Wow, that I could live here.
Yes.
And yeah, it's interesting. People, you're coming from Chicago, Buffalo
mm-hmm.
background. This is going to look like a rural community. It's going to look like country. We're actually one of the smallest metropolitan statistical areas in the U.S. We're about 312 of 324. And the only metro area in New York State that's smaller than the Ithaca-Tompkins area is Elmira.
Is that right?
And we just passed them in the last 20 years.
Okay.
So it's kind of it's interesting. But Ithaca is kind of usually the opposite of what you come from. If you come from rural area,
mm-hmm.
you see it as being kind of a city, a little city. And if you come from a big city, you see it as a small town or a rural area.
Mm-hmm.
It's just it's fascinating to see people's and hear people's responses. So once you got here, what'd you do?
Well, I came here also because I needed to choose, but I came here because my friend was a pastor here.
Right.
So I came here, I got to working, I got to some ministry things at his church, Pastor Benson,
mm-hmm.
and then I got into some work up at Cornell, really ministry there.
Mm-hmm.
I've worked at a lot of different human service organizations, and you know, I really enjoyed. I worked at Southside. I've worked there 3 different times. I really enjoy mm-hmm. that children aspect. I was able to discover the need. Children have a need for some direction, and if you can give them a little order, it helps them, you know, even in their future later on, you know.
Right, right. Absolutely, absolutely. And you just said that you moved here because you had a relationship with somebody here.
A friend of mine.
You here.
Yes.
And one of the things that in this day and age, we think about people moving for jobs or opportunity, but almost always it's a move to be where they already know people.
Okay.
Because it's the people who we know who help make the transition with us, who are going to kind of keep the faith with us until we figure out how to stand on our feet wherever we happen to end up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a fact about how to move that we sometimes forget. You just did it.
But the key is to have at least one.
Right.
One friend, at least one.
At least one, yeah.
You know, that will continue to be your friend.
Yeah. And then to quickly make as many more as you can.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And of the many more, you're still only going to get one or two more out really of the good many friends. More.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yes. Yeah, 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 yeah. And that's true. There are those who are near and dear, and those who are more just around when they want to be.
So I did get one additional really good from here in Ithaca. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's really important. Mm-hmm.
You know. So what kind of ministry, you know, what do you do? What when you say you're excited by kids, what is it about your work or your vocation? How would we get to know you a little bit?
Well, I pastor a really small church. Mm-hmm. And
by really small, you mean?
Small in congregation, small in
It's a storefront church.
It's a storefront church. It is.
On State Street.
Yeah. Corner State and Plain.
Yeah.
335 West State Street. You know, I may as well throw it out there. Martin Luther King Street. Yes.
Yeah.
On the corner there. But that's not who I am only.
No, that's part of what you do, but you're not ashamed to pastor a small church.
No.
And there's a pecking order among pastors about, you know, status and stuff.
Sometimes it seems to be, and
it doesn't need to be, but you're not, you serve a small church.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Tell me more about it.
And I guess you're right. There is a pecking order. There is a pecking order also with male and women and female pastors.
There can be. Absolutely.
There can be. But however, one of the things that I have learned early on in the ministry is that the way up is down. So out of humility, out of not trying to be so suchy much as you're trying to be, let me just serve.
Right.
You know.
And who is it that you're serving? Who is it that you're relating to and being with in this ministry that you do? What kinds of issues, what sort of people and what circumstances do you find yourself drawn to? What is the nature of where you make connection?
In prayer.
Okay.
I'll pray for anybody on the street, anywhere, anytime. If somebody says, hey, I saw a young man, I was walking through Center Ithaca, young man's walking with two other friends. Young man, I'm talking maybe 22, 23. He says, hey, pray, give me a prayer. Don't forget to say a prayer for me. I turned around, I said, well, come here. Give me your hand.
Right.
And I take people's hands and pray right away because a mother of a church I was talking to, she said, you know, Pastor Hicks, you are instant in prayer.
Right.
And that's what's key. Mm-hmm. I like to pray. I like to make that connection with people because people long for somebody that appears to know God. And then when they see your life consistent day after day after day, it's the same thing. They say, oh, pray for me. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when you pray and if you can pray and the Lord answers that prayer, does something for those people. Everybody won't remember, but occasionally somebody will remember and give God the glory because it's not about me.
What is prayer to you? What does it mean to pray?
It means to, first of all, humble myself and acknowledge my higher power, as some say, the supreme, the almighty, the great I am. And then ask, make a request. First acknowledge, then make a request of what I desire, of what the person I'm touching and agreeing with, because the Bible says, if you touch and agree, where two or three are gathered in my name, touching and agreeing, there am I in the midst of them. So being able to make a request, humble myself, make a request, and not pray forever. I don't have time for the 10-minute prayer.
You're not about long-winded.
Right, no,
which is more about the speaker than it is about this what's spoken.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's key, what's spoken.
Yeah. One of the definitions of prayer that I've found really useful, and it's actually a definition that can help people who are not religious or who may be a little bit offended by religious practice, and that is to pray is to plead one's case.
Oh, okay.
To make one's statement for what is hurting or what is needful or what is longed for, to just make it absolutely clear and to pray, which is the old English meaning of pray, which is to plead your case and to plead your case before God and humanity so that people know what you're looking for and God knows, people knows, and the whole universe in some sense can conspire to work for you to help you get it or to help you understand why it's not real. Because some of the things we pray for may not be the best for in our best interests, but we need to pray for them, and so that we can be guided that there may be something else that's possible, not what we asked for.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah,
I'll say it like that way rather than go, oh yeah, no. But that's a good way to look at it. We often try to pray or attempt to pray within the will of God, so that we are not asking for something.
We try, but sometimes we're wrong. You're right. We try to be right in that space with what is true and real, and that's to use language that's now outside the Christian tradition. But yeah, no, it's powerful. And what I've learned from the kind of prayer that you're talking about, and that I'm trying to describe, is that almost all conversation becomes prayer when it's honest.
Okay.
So that's in a profound way when we talk about things that are really happening, like the Marvin Gaye, what's going on, what's really going on here, not what's the hype or what's the show, but what's really going on, where's the pain, where's the opportunity, where's the healing, where's the gift of relationship, and that's you picked some other music, and you also made a comment that, you know, this is one of the things this is what I do, don't confuse that with who I am. I'm wondering, is this T.D. Jakes song Lord Prepare Me, is this more about who you are, or maybe the total praise, or what where should we go next with the music?
T.D. Jakes.
Okay. And this song, do you want to do an introduction to it, or do you want to comment on it after we've listened to it?
After we listen.
Okay, so this is Bishop T.D. Jakes and Lord Prepare Me.
Lord, prepare me to be your sanctuary and holy. And with thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary, Lord, for you. Sanctuary. I want to be pure and holy. Let me be tried and true, Lord. Oh, thank you, Lord. Are you thankful tonight? I'll be a living sanctuary, sanctuary. Oh, Lord, for you. Sing it with all of your heart, Lord, prepare me. Jesus, to be a sanctuary. I want to be pure and holy. Oh, let me be tried and true. Let me
And that was T.D. Jakes and Lord Prepare Me to Be a Sanctuary. Now, Sonia, you were going to make some comments on that song.
I like that song because it appeals to my desire to be pleasing to God.
Mm-hmm.
To be prepared to be a sanctuary, to be prepared to be the dwelling place, to be prepared to know or keep yourself in a place or mindset to know what God is desiring from me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
And that's what that song says. I remember, I never will forget, I played it when I still had my Christian bookstore. I used to have a Christian bookstore.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And I played it for a customer came in and it just made me cry. You know, and it always had great meaning because I want to be prepared and I don't want to ever get to that finished building. You don't need to do anything else.
Right,
there's always
right.
something that's going to be needed and I want to know. So in that preparation, I will understand that need. Mm-hmm, I will mm-hmm. understand what I need to do.
And I, because I think so many people these days don't relate to the God language, and I want your message to be heard because it's a particularly powerful statement that you're making, powerful for you, and I want people to understand that power in ways that strip away some of the prejudice about the language.
Mm-hmm.
And as what I hear you say is that I'm just a person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not up to all of what reality has to throw at me, so I have to be constantly in preparation.
I would agree.
And being constantly in preparation for all that can be thrown at me, though and to be able to respond, not to handle it, not to solve it, because that's not my role, that's reality's role or God's role.
Mm-hmm.
But to be so in tune with what is real and what is possible
mm-hmm.
that I'm constantly adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not so much about either a black or a white or a male version of God, but it's mm-hmm. about that reality that defies any of our labels for it.
Absolutely.
Or our pictures of it that are all idolatrous in the end.
Right.
Yeah. That's related to
you're preaching
to
the preacher now.
Well, no, this, but the thing is I'm translating also, because what you said is powerful even to a non-theist, because no one is up for all that reality can throw at us, and we're constantly preparing, you know, to deal with things we haven't yet faced and to readjust to things that we assume we already knew.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's powerful. Mm-hmm. And that's what you said, I think, if I got it right.
I think you got it right.
Okay. Okay. So, as a person, you know, When I ask, oh yeah, the wind is picking up, and we got a big snow flurry going on out there.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you, what is the quality in your heart, and in the way you engage people? What is the quality that you seek to cultivate?
Oh,
this is who you are.
Right. My earnest desire is that whomever I talk with, meet, because you're not, everybody's not going to like you. Now that I definitely know. Everybody,
nor should they.
Right,
we want to be honest.
right. So being able to, whether they like me or not, being able to present to them something that is likable mm-hmm. about my character.
Right. To not offend intentionally.
Right. You know, and so then in that I'm able to, more often than not, I'm able to address people with positive input
mm-hmm.
because that's what's important. I don't want to tell you something that's wrong, and I don't want to misdirect you, and I just want to offer you some good, I won't say advice even, just some knowledge that I may have
right.
that might help you.
Right.
And so that's what I try to offer.
Okay, so the image that comes to mind is you're a traveler on the road, and you want to be able to tell people where you've been, and what you've learned, and in as much as it's without being directive, without giving advice,
right.
but giving from the well of what you've learned.
Right, I would agree. I would agree with that, and then that helps people who don't have any experience. That helps them to gain from you.
Right.
You know, people always say experience is mm-hmm. the best teacher, and it is. But if I've experienced something, like if I drink a cup of coffee and I know when it first comes out of that pot, it's very hot,
yeah.
then I can say to the next person, that coffee's hot, be careful. You know, and if right. they don't listen, then they drink that hot coffee and burn themselves. But if they do listen, then they've learned too, and they understand. But how will they really understand that the coffee is hot mm-hmm. until they take a little sip?
Right.
Then they have the experience, she's right, that coffee is hot.
Right, right, you right. know? And it's that's a funny, you know, you cannot give people their futures. You can only tell them what you've seen in the past,
right?
And hope that they will be flexible and strong enough to adapt to what they run into,
right?
And that advice given with that attitude, that you know, this is what I've seen, you're going to have to figure it out for yourself, lands in a whole different way than advice that is like, you know, telling you what to do.
Right. Right, right. Because yeah. when you try to tell people, they don't listen.
Yeah. Well, then they shouldn't listen because it's not your place.
You know, I agree.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Interesting. So, you still work up at Cornell. What?
I do not.
Okay.
I was there at the ministry. I was a chaplain for mm-hmm. quite a few years. As a matter of fact, I was a chaplain, mentor, advisor. Up there for 21 years.
And you've moved on.
Yep.
So, what issues in this community kind of get your attention? How are you trying to have an impact in your ministry in this community now? What are the issues you're taking on?
I see there is a need for employment. That's people are unemployed. I see a need for redirection of our young people mm-hmm. because I think that the direction that they're in and where they find comfort, mm-hmm. people's comfort zones often are not really a good comfort place for them.
Right.
And that's in my opinion, but it goes beyond now an opinion, because when you talk about employment and people's needs, then you are talking about going into their personal lives.
Right.
You know, what do they really need privately? You know, are they comfortable in their homes? Do they have enough food every day?
Right.
Not some days. And so I see a need to address those things and try to help people. I want to help people. I want to see our young people not recreational smoking marijuana every day,
right?
You know, learning that they need some discipline in things that they do and choices that they make.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So, you know, without being a stickler, if I can help somebody get a good job, you know, making substantial amounts of money. And so often people say, well, you can't really do that without formal education. I'm finding a lot of our young people don't even have a high school diploma.
Right.
So, you know, encouraging them to do that, get your GED, get your high school diploma. Right now, I find that people are drawn to tattoos. I don't have one.
Right.
It's mm-hmm. your choice. Mm-hmm. Tattoos mm-hmm. and piercings, those are all choices people make. But don't allow the choice that you make to hinder where you want to go in life.
Right.
Do you have a vision? What do you want to do? What do you really want to do 5 years from now? Do you have a thought about, no, I don't know. Girl, male or female, you need to have some thoughts about what you want to own a business. Okay.
Right.
Then think in terms of how can I accomplish that? And it's so many resources available here in Ithaca until, you know, the sky's the limit, really.
Right. And yet, and what you're saying is really, we have, according to the government, we have the lowest unemployment rate in New York State and have almost every month for the last 20 or 30 years. But the issue is that the numbers don't pick up people who have quit looking,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers don't pick up people who never entered the job market to mm-hmm. begin with,
mm-hmm.
and the numbers don't pick up. We have a lot of people on both ends of the economic spectrum who are unemployed, people whose spouses had good paying jobs, but they can't find, this is such a small metro area, there aren't jobs that are appropriate for their spouses, so they end up having more time on their hands than they want to have. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people who cobble together, you know, 10 hours here, 5 hours there, 20 hours. They end up with 3 to 5 jobs that makes it so they can barely get by, because mm-hmm. none of those little jobs pays all that well. Mm-hmm. So those are, there's pictures here that don't work. And when you say my people or my community or my kids, are you referring to the persons of color? Are you referring to poor folks? Are you referring to
poor
people
folks.
In general? Yeah.
Poor folks.
Yeah.
It's poverty goes across the color.
It's
you know, I see everybody, and that's what's really key. I see everybody. I used to work for OAR, Offender Aid and Restoration, which has a new name now,
right.
Which I don't know.
Opportunities, access, and resources.
Is that it? Okay.
Well,
that's about it. But when I would go up to the jail, and because I was a client services representative, and I would go up to the jail, and then I would have to help somebody fill out some applications, whether mm-hmm. for services or for DSS, Department of Social Services application. And when they would say to me, well, I can't read, mm-hmm. and you look at somebody 25,
yeah.
30 years
right.
old,
right.
you know, and you wouldn't think that they were lying because they, you know, they couldn't read.
Right.
You know, so knowing that these things are going on. You know, when I worked for DSS and I would go as a supervised visitor or go to a home, excuse me, go to a home and I mean, you know, when you look at how people live in,
mm-hmm.
you know, go out in rural areas and
right.
it would be hard.
Right, right. And one of the sad ironies of this area is the people that are just above that level of poverty mm-hmm. or lack of access move out because they can't afford the housing here.
Right.
They can't. And so
right.
one of the things that we do as a region is we export the working poor
mm-hmm.
because once they get up to that level, they can't afford to live here.
Right.
And they have to go. And
right.
And that's a fact we really haven't faced as a local economy. And those who are left have more serious needs and more long-term and needs. And you used the term before that you have to get into their homes and their private lives. And I want to make a distinction. There are things that are private merely only affect ourselves,
mm-hmm.
but there are things that are personal that have an impact on others.
Mm-hmm.
And that's they're no longer private.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I mean, we don't own them just by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of what happens to us is personal, but not private.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if I haven't learned to read because I haven't, the system hasn't helped me to understand its importance, or I haven't taken the initiative, or
mm-hmm.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
Then that's personal, but that's not private.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
if I don't have food, and I have been trying, you know, that's a personal problem, but it's not private. It's
mm-hmm.
a systemic issue
mm-hmm.
that's not private at
mm-hmm.
all.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, what do you consider private then?
Private is where the choices that I have to make affect only me. It's my personal domain.
Okay, so would you say private is a man that is sexually abusing a child? Is that private?
No,
is that
that's not private.
Life?
That's not his private life.
Okay, but you just said personal, so
it's personal, but it is not private because that other child is deeply affected.
Deeply affected.
And we have such a we misuse that term private so much.
Okay.
Because we're having an impact on others, and others have to be able to know our choices and our behaviors in order to make good choices for themselves. It's no longer a private matter.
So would it be private? Would you consider something private if I know how I'm thinking and don't share with anyone? Then that's private.
It's private. But if you know how you're thinking and you're making choices that constrain another person's choices because you're going to schnooker them, you're going to take advantage of the
mm-hmm.
knowledge that you know so they can't get what they need.
Mm-hmm.
Then you've moved beyond what's private to create a situation where they can't thrive. So you've used information that they should have. You know what I'm saying? So there's very little that's truly private where
okay.
we keep it to ourselves. And a lot of it's personal, and we haven't learned how. And I think that's had a really damaging effect on poor people and, you know, poor people across the color spectrum. Because when you can't share with others what's going on in your life, then you can't own it. You can't get help with it. You can't say, well, is this right or is this wrong? Because I just can't talk about it.
Right.
You know? And so, but once you can talk about it, it's personal, but not private.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So then,
sure. So, yeah.
You're saying that we need to, as a community, move away from the thought of private things and move to personal things that can be in
community.
Given.
Yeah. And received.
And received. So that we can help one another.
Right, right. Because okay. If we don't know each other's conditions.
Right.
If we don't, I mean, one of the things that healthcare improves if the healthcare provider goes into the home and sees the conditions, or if the healthcare provider not only knows the person and their immediate family, mm-hmm. but their whole extended network. Mm-hmm. Because that's where health happens. Mm-hmm. That's the real context. And it's personal, but it's not private.
So because of what you just shared with me, I guess I need to change my terminology.
Well, maybe not. I invite you to think about it.
You can't give me that double standard.
No. Okay. What I'm trying to say is that that's your choice. It's not my choice.
I understand that. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. But it was a good analogy of what between private and personal. Yeah. And I'm always looking to learn and grow. And so that's what really... I'll consider that from now on when I get ready to use the word private.
Good, and I think we as a community are locked into relational networks where we don't know each other. We know the people who are most close to us, and a few people in other groups. But the people that we know in other economic class or cultural settings or whatever, we don't tend to not have them in our homes. And the only way we really know each other is when we're in each other's homes.
You think so?
Because in each other's personal space.
Okay.
You know, we need to be in each other's personal space, because if we're not, we really
don't know
each other.
But then that's where private comes from.
Well, no. But private is even one step closer in. You know what I'm saying? You know, private is what, if it needs to be truly private, it's shared as a clear confidence with your counselor, or as a clear confidence with a friend, and you both agree that this is held in secret. Privacy is essentially secret.
Okay, then we go back. I'll go back, because there are some things that are private. Whether you come in my home or not, there's still some things that I will keep private.
Absolutely.
There are some things
Absolutely.
That have occurred in your life that was private.
Right.
That you will not share.
With anyone. Yeah. And there are some things that you will not share that maybe you should share, because you'll be free of them if you do, or other people would benefit from your sharing if you did. But there are some things also that just are always off limits for whatever reason.
Right.
Because they're private.
Right.
Yes. But but we don't oftentimes think about that in a nuanced way. We think of it in a kind of an extreme and a reactive
way. You know, made me
way.
Put my glasses on, audience. I've had to put my glasses on now. Really look at this gentleman here. Okay.
So anyway, it's in our time to cut to another song, and Total Praise. That's for the end. Do we want to, or thanks?
Thanks.
Okay. And there's also I Don't Feel No Ways Tired. Oh. But let's do thanks, because I think this is what you connected with.
Okay.
Okay. And it's Richard Smallwood singing Thank You.
Thank you.
was Richard Smallwood leading Thank You. And our guest this morning on the Made of Clay Report is Sonia Hicks. And Sonia, how have you changed over the years?
I think I've softened. I have found that things don't always necessarily have to be my way. I've always been able to apologize, but to be able to really realize that things are not always my way. I'm not always right about everything. Sometimes people tend to think that it's their way or no way. And I've learned that, excuse me, someone I called grandma used to tell me, she said, your skin is thin. You got to thicken up a little bit. Everything is not as harsh as we take it to heart, you know, you feel bad, want to just...
Just because you hurt doesn't mean they were out to get you.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I had to, for me, the issue is I've had to, I wouldn't admit that I was hurt. Mm-hmm. And as a consequence, it made it very hard for me to apologize when I hurt other people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And having to learn how to be honest about being hurt and makes it easier to apologize for when you hurt other people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been just a tough, you know, lesson for me, because I grew up hiding the hurt, you know, and you can't hide the hurt. You have to, yeah. So in your, when you soften, and not everything is a big issue, what opens up to you? What becomes possible now that wasn't possible because you softened?
Being able to hear.
I
can hear. I can hear what other people are saying to me. Well, how about this, they'll say. And then I'll say, yeah, okay. Well, I'll try that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what they were saying works. You know, if I'd have maintained I just want to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't always work, or it doesn't work as well.
Right. You impress me as someone who has to be constantly in motion. And that's not just any motion, that's purposeful, intentional motion. It's sometimes hard to relate to that amount of energy and hard to keep it up. So it would seem like the softening may be changing the pace at which you live.
Well,
Or changing the feeling of how you live.
I like to be around. I like my rest time, though.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
I will be 60 years old this year.
Wow.
And I know it. Okay.
Yes.
My birthday is July 4th. I like to celebrate because the world celebrates. Mm-hmm. Lots of people celebrate July 4th. And I tend to do a lot. I go to bed early, wake up early. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's part of aging as well.
Right.
Yeah.
And I want to tie this now to I Don't Feel No Ways Tired.
Okay.
How does that song relate to your life?
Because we can't stop. You got to keep going. You know, you hear people slowing down and stopping or going into retirement, and it doesn't work. It really doesn't work for them. Mm-hmm. Even though they do it, they're still doing something else.
Right.
You know, we are born to keep going until we die.
Right.
So keep going.
Right. And you know, in even if I had the resources to retire to leisure, I wouldn't know what to do with it. I just wouldn't. I've been working for pay since I was 11 years old.
Wow.
Helping to support my family, and I've spent a lot of years in grad school, so people don't think of me as a worker because I was there for so very long. But you know, I started when it was illegal for them to hire me,
and
they got caught, and we had to kind of deal with that. But I kept working, and it didn't change things. And I know what you mean.
Okay.
So we're going to say, I Don't Feel No Ways Tired, and this is an a cappella rendition of that song.
There will be mountains that I will have to climb. And there will be battles that I will have to fight. But victory or defeat It's up to me to decide, but how can I expect to win if I never try? I just can't give up now. I've come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the road would be easy, and I don't believe he's brought me this far to leave me. Never said there would be trials, never said I wouldn't fall, never said that everything will go the way I want it to go. But when my back is against the wall and I feel our hope is gone, I just lift my head up to the sky and say, Lord, help me to be strong. Oh, yeah, yeah. I just can't give up now. I've come too far from where I started from. Nobody told me that the roads would be easy, and I don't believe he's brought me this far to leave me. I know that you are with me, so I can't. I just can't give up now. I've come too far from where I started from.
Nobody told me no.
Nobody told me that the roads would be.
And that was I Don't Feel No Ways Tired. And you're listening to the Made of Clay Report, and our guest this morning is Sonia Hicks. And Sonia, one of the topics I like to kind of close our time out with on this show is to what is it that you to address kind of how it is that you restore yourself, how it is that you help maintain, sustain your optimism, your connection, your energy, your intellect, your emotion, your body. I mean, how is it you keep yourself going?
Well, I like to go fishing. I'm an avid fisher woman. Whenever I can, I go. I like to fish. Fishing uh-huh. relaxes me. I will take a vacation day of especially when the season first opens. I like to fish down around Jamestown, New York. I got good mm-hmm. friends down mm-hmm. there. Mm-hmm. And, you know.
And what do you fish for?
Bass.
Bass, yeah.
I like calico bass, mm-hmm. crappies, we call them, okay. as well. Perch. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, never really catch a lot of anything worth catching, you know, something
well, for
real
fisher,
small.
For, yeah, for most fisher folks, it's the fishing as much as the fish.
Right, right. Yeah. I also like, I like to laugh. I like that restore that I can find some comics, mm-hmm. you know, and I can just chuckle and laugh, or I like to get with friends and family. And all of that helps to revitalize me. You know, I like to do those things, and I like to worship God. That spiritual worshiping mm-hmm, mm-hmm. really brings me back to a new place, a fresh place.
For you, what is worship? We have, that's a word that's loaded with lots of assumptions. What is the worship? What do you do? What do you feel? What happens when you worship?
You humble yourself.
Okay.
So and you acknowledge the greatness of God. Mm-hmm. You know, and to me, that's what worship really means, to humble myself, to acknowledge God, to listen, to hear if God is going to say something to me, you know, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. That's what worship is, to hold my hands up in absolute surrender of self.
Right, right, right. And so what I'm seeing, what I have as an image here is that as you become, in some sense, smaller in the face of a reality that's so big and even bigger because you are trying to step back and not be so out there, but just to let it come in.
Yes.
That then there's an opportunity for change.
Yes.
And for wonder.
Yes.
And for learning things that might have been unable to be perceived when you were in a bigger state.
Yes.
More ego or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, and I think that practice of worship is something that people, whether they're theists or atheists, actually do. You can't be functional in the world without resizing your perspective, and it oftentimes involves stepping back and and taking a letting the bigger picture come in.
Yes.
Wow. So. What do you do on a daily basis? Are these things that you actively do daily? What are they?
I don't fish daily, but my other joy, my other real passion is I like the television. I have a television program, and I like recording and interviewing people.
I know the feeling,
and that just gives me a great joy. I'm waiting to interview you, Eric.
You know, we will do that.
Yes,
we'll do that. In terms of, and I'm just asking here because sometimes people, when do you realize that you need to do something to restore yourself? Because there are people who have a kind of a regular practice that they just do every morning or every evening, and there are other people who say, well, I meditate when I feel things becoming, when I'm becoming too sharp or too critical or too reactive. How is it that you know that you need to take a personal break?
When I start falling asleep while I'm talking, or you know, that's the personal break. But in actuality,
exhaustion is your key.
Yes. But I feel like that whenever the time for a worship break is whenever you can get one. If you're walking and something happens, you're walking on the street and something happens and you see someone and they come and say, oh, guess what happened? Pastor Hicks, guess what happened?
Right.
And I say, what? And they just tell me a great testimony. That's a point of worship.
Right, right. And it's like the story you said of the boy who was a young man who was on the commons who said, you know, remember to pray for me. And you just stopped and prayed for him right there on the spot.
Right.
And knowing that prayer is speaking honest words of what we need and what we hope for.
Yes.
And it's pleading our case.
Yes.
In the court of God and reality.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Sonia. This has been a lot of Sonia. I'm a human being and I mess things up and I often mess up names, so I apologize.
No problem.
Sonia, it has been wonderful getting to know you.
Thank you.
And
you.
And thank you. And you wanted to close this session out with a song from Richard Smallwood, "Total Praise," and we're going to do that. And I just want you to give a little intro into this. What is this song say? Why is this the song we're closing on?
This song talks about expressing who you are in worship, again, praising God. And when I first heard it, I just went to a place of praise. I heard it up on Cornell campus, and it was wonderful. And all of the students looked at me and just said, wow. You know, and I had never heard it before, even though it had been out a little while.
And you were so visibly taken by it, they got
visibly
you.
Taken.
Yeah.
I was.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, this is "Total Praise," or by Richard Smallwood.
Thank you.
was Total Praise and Richard Smallwood. And you've been listening to the Made of Clay Report, Made of Clay Mondays, and you're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca.